tonight, speakers.
Tanya.
Thanks, Charlie.
I'm Tanya Minati.
Hi.
Now I'm nervous. Everybody keeps saying, how are you? I mean, okay, and I'm sure you're feeling nervous. And I wasn't, and now I feel like I'm drinking it. That's what they're saying. It's a bit surreal now. There's loads of people I know, and lots of people I don't know. And God, I've been in recovery. It's long now, isn't it? I've 9 years clean. Last month. And, I was listening to John share, and he ended his sharing about amends, and what's going on for me now is that I'm in the middle of writing my amends. So I do my step work out of the step working guide. And I'll talk about my drugs in a minute, but I guess this is what's going on for me at the moment. And just thinking about that freedom, that's what's been kind of going around in my head this week, is just I don't feel shame and guilt, but I can see that some of the patterns in my life that I'm attracting from other people have something to do with me, and something to do with my past, and maybe about karma, about the way I've treated people, and what I'm like when I'm in my illness, whether I'm clean or whether I'm using. And, I am an addict, and it took me a long time to understand what that meant, or even just to accept it. So I think I accepted it long before I understood it, which I think is probably step 2 or 3. And, I came in, I didn't go to treatment. I sometimes feel like it's a bit of a luxury, because that I didn't know about. I had no idea about treatment. I was working. I came to London more than a decade ago now, and I was here. I was on my own. It was the first time I'd been away from my family, and I was in my early 20s. I started using before I got here, but it was the first time in my life that I had really been on my own, and I liked it. Anybody who knows me, I don't like convention, I don't like rules, I don't think they apply to me. I stick to them, but I don't think that they apply to me. And so I'll tell everyone else to follow the rules, but I won't follow the rules. And yeah, I'm still a bit like that, actually. Needless to say, I haven't got any sponsees at the moment. and I was on my own here, because my recovery began in London. Wow, my using really took off in London, because I was on my own and I could do what I wanted. And I went home is in Cape Town, and I've not really done much recovery in Cape Town. And I don't know, it just like people come along in your life when you need them sometimes. Some of them stay, some people are gone. Some people I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. But I went home 1 year, and I was using quite heavily. And I was a social work student. My supervisor, she was also a healer, and she put me down on a mat and read my, was reading my aura. And she's like, Tanya, I don't know what you're doing, but your aura is disappearing, and it's very murky. And we talked about, it's really weird, because I found some crystals that she gave me all those years ago, and I've started carrying them around with me. And she gave me a feeling. She just said, you need to think about taking drugs, really. And there had been someone in my early 20s. I'd been in therapy on and off since I was 11. Very traumatic childhood, which I only realized when I was about 4 years clean. And and I was seeing this therapist, and she was very good. I was with my ex-partner, my now ex-partner, and I used to smoke a lot of weed. I was a hippie, I was a rasta, I was all that stuff, but always I was using something. And cannabis was one of those things I don't know, it was just always there. It was part of my neighbourhood kind of thing, you know. You grew up and then you smoked weed and drank lots of alcohol. And anyway, I was smoking quite a lot of cannabis, and I was driving myself a bit because I started hearing voices and I didn't quite understand, you know, when I was studying all these things about what drug use did to you and about psychosis, so I could, you know, assess all the people that I was going to help when I qualified. And it occurred to me that maybe something was wrong. And she was the first person really who pointed out that I might have a problem with drugs. And I said, you might be right. You might be right, but I don't think I want to do anything about it. And then shortly after that, I came to London. And so drugs, my relationship with drugs, those bad love affairs, one of that, you know, when you have a bad relationship and you know you shouldn't be there, but you keep going back because it's the only thing that really is constant. It was the only constant in my life. God, I'm really emotional. I've quit smoking. I'm just going to jump around because I'm a bit mad anyway, but I quit smoking 15 days ago. And now I have to count the days because nothing else is working. And it's the last drug. It is the last drug. And it's really, it's crazy how attached I am to, like, to smoking something. I would smoke anything you gave me, but that is the last thing. And my relationship with nicotine has sort of seen me through some of my recovery. Really, that's what's happened, you know, that and caffeine. It's kind of like, I came in on a rock bottom off from cocaine, really. That's what was happening, you know. I loved amphetamines. I'm not into all, like, gouging out, drooling, and that's not my thing. Like, I like to be awake and up all the time. And the thing that I, you know, had to down with something, so I'm also an alcoholic. And it's just so, I don't know, you know, it's been so long since I've actually talked about drugs, like how I used or even thought about it. This week has literally just been about what am I going to say? And then having to let the self-obsession just hum in the background while I try to do what I normally do, which is adjust to life. And, so I came in off kind of cocaine, really. And in the beginning, I was about to be homeless. I had a job. I kept my job for some reason, and I'm, you know, helping vulnerable people. And in a lot of denial about my own functioning, and ended up in sort of West London, you know, just living in some room with some people I didn't know. It was the same story, kind of. Every 6 months I'd move house, live with someone else, take more drugs, you know, and then decide I don't like them anymore. They were getting to know me, so I'd move house, you know, take more drugs, meet more people, sleep with more people, go out with more people. That's what London was like. But also that was what my life was like. It was just like a series of relationships with people I'd use. And and when I came into recovery, that continued for quite a while. I didn't know what people were actually meant for. And, you know, just not in a bad way, but that I didn't understand about love, or humility, or understanding. This is very much step eight stuff. I have to look at what I've done to other people. You know, when I'm in my addiction, and I've been in my addiction when I've been clean, and it's not fun, you know, when I'm acting out around other people and using other people to achieve, I don't know, what I could not meet for myself. It's not just about my drug addiction, you know. Drugs helped me to cope with all that stuff. But I didn't know what else to do with, really. And, you know, when I tried to get clean, it was kind of a normal, you know, when I say normal, I mean conventional period of time. It took me a few months of sort of coming to meetings. And I kept drinking. I didn't understand. And I love alcohol. I loved alcohol. I'm not so sure about it anymore, but you know, I had a real thing about it. I had a very odd relationship with my father. You know, we used to hang out together and we used to drink together. it was allowed, you know, that was the kind of relationship we had with each other. And Betty, I don't know, you know, where he is at the moment because we've not been talking, but that was kind of my relationship with men, really. It was that kind of, they looked after you, but you did whatever needed to be done to sort of keep the relationship calm. My dad's very volatile, and I became very volatile because of it. And so I had a lot of trauma, and the alcohol was just, I couldn't stop drinking. I started coming to meetings, and they'd say abstinence, and I'd go, yes, yes, yes. But I had no idea what the word meant. And I was, you know, too clever for myself sometimes. And I wouldn't look it up because I thought I must know. And the only abstinence I've ever heard of is like, where I come from, HIV is quite rife. So I just thought it was about sex. So it's like, you're sexually abstinent so that you don't get ill, you know, that you don't get infected with the virus. So I didn't understand that it meant I can't drink. So after a few tries of kind of drinking and then ending up back on the cocaine, you know, I didn't understand that it wasn't about the drugs, because all I wanted to do then was just get clean. I wanted to be okay. I wanted to learn how to not use to make myself feel okay. And the reality is it was a solution for a long time, you know, being numb, being high, being crazy. And it gave me an excuse to not take responsibility for myself, really. And so I kept coming. I came to my first meeting. Connor, I was sharing about that yesterday. I came to my first meeting after a weekend of trying to, I don't know, not take any coke, I think. I think I drank loads, but something happened, and I had some weird sort of physical reaction to what not having any drugs. And then Monday came and went, and I didn't go to work. And then Tuesday came, and I was like, I have to go to work. There's no way I can stay out, because I never went to the doctor for anything because I was too scared to sort of talk about what was really going on with me. And then sat outside, and I'd been in therapy. That was all the therapists, bless them. They really tried. And I had this particular therapist. This was the third time I'd seen her. With the same issue, you know, there was some man in my life who was driving me nuts, and he was giving me drugs, and I couldn't cope, and I was working, and I couldn't cope with work. And then so after the third stint of the same issue, she's just like, you keep coming back with the same problems, and all I can think of is that you're addicted, you're an addict, and you need to get help, and if you don't get help, don't come back. And I was like, well, I won't be seeing her again then, will I? And I never, but I felt judged, I guess. She was very cold. And she was. But she was just so judgmental about the fact that I was taking these drugs, you know. And I just thought, I've come to you for help. Anyway, in her own way, she helped me. But she had given me a list of phone numbers. You know, and when you're using, those days the inner helpline used to close at 10 o'clock at night. Goes to bed at 10 o'clock when you're using. So I'd be up at midnight, like not realizing what the time was, calling the NA helpline, waiting, and then just thinking, these people never answer the phone. And anyway, it was a Tuesday. Because it was obviously the weekend and I couldn't get out of bed. And so Tuesday, I usually used to emerge at some point and go, well, I have to get my shit together and go to work. And it's weird that they never knew, you know. I was working in social services and crazy, like I'd be erratic, you know, and I'd be all right with the clients were okay, but my colleagues, I don't know how they coped, you know. And they never knew. They must have just thought I was mad. And they let me work with people. And, you know, it's a bit like, yeah, social workers are another story altogether. But, you know, because I did love my job, but I'm so vulnerable. It's been a journey to sort of find out what that's about. But so I'm sitting outside going, you know, on the phone, finally getting through because it was in the morning, so someone was awake, you know, and crying down, like howling down the phone about, I think it's because I have no drugs. I think this is because there are no drugs. This is why I don't know what's wrong. What is going on with me? You know, just like, you know that when you run out of drugs, you go a bit mad, don't you? Because I wasn't a person who went out in school. I'm a bit of a snob. So I wouldn't go out in school. There would always be someone else who'd do it for me. Or I'd go, you know, I was that kind of sort of addict. And then all the women said, and I never found out who it was. That was the weirdest thing, you know. It was completely anonymous. All she said was, it sounds like you need a meeting. She listened to me and then said, it sounds like you need a meeting. And that night, that day I went to a meeting. It was my first meeting. That was so funny. So I still know where it is. I don't know if it's still on, but I haven't passed it for a while on Haddo Road. And I sat in this meeting. I was battered. Like, I had just battered my, you know, I think now when I look back, I realize how I was quite traumatized from whatever, you know, from my life really, and my experiences with my family. But underneath all that was just like, I hadn't learned to take responsibility. I didn't have the switch that some people have that. You know, my brother is not an addict. He has his issues, but he's not an addict. You know, he smoked Mandrax, and I'd be like, yeah, I smoked Mandrax, you know. And he never did it again. And I smoked it, and I'm like, I don't like the taste, but I'll do it again. And, you know, because it's quite endemic. In the end, you know, before I sort of came to London, we used to go around to this guy's house. I was always friends with the boys. I do like the boys. They just, like, they chilled out. You know, they don't have all that stuff going on, women have going on. And I've learned to sort of balance that in recovery, but we used to go around this guy's house, and he had this, like, Staffy. I used to love that dog, but I was really scared of him at the time. And we used to smoke meth on a Friday afternoon when they all came out of work. And the reason I was smoking meth was because I couldn't take ecstasy, because every time I took ecstasy, I'd pass out. And we couldn't figure out what the combination was, really, that was going to keep me up. So I was allowed to smoke meth, you know. And it was strange the way we made decisions. You know, the reason I ended up in London was because I failed my driving test. It wasn't like a planned journey, like, this is what I wish for my life, you know. And so I came here to work, and it was weird that it took a few months for me to get that. So I stopped using coke. I was like, right, is the coke that's the problem, is the cocaine. I can't take cocaine, I can't take ecstasy, I can't smoke meth, I can't take cannabis, but I can drink. But then every time I had a drink, I ended up using coke. And one, just like, I say relapse, what I mean was, it was the first time I'd taken coke for quite a while. And I was at this party, met this guy who was fresh out of detox. No idea what, I was just like, yeah, we were talking, so we whips out his little bag, and I just think, oh no, it's my enemy, you know, but he's my mate. So now we're like, you know, sitting in the bedroom, and he's like, yeah, I've just come out of detox, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm having a relapse, rah, rah, rah. I had a sponsor by then as well. And so I ended up, you know, using, and then that, I went back to work on the Monday. I think I made it to work on a Monday that weekend, after that weekend, and sat at my desk, you know, so we had open plan offices, and I was sitting in, it was hot like it is now, and my nose, you know, and I was rubbing my nose, and I was like, that's odd, it feels really warm, and blood just trickled down my face onto my keyboard at work. And I sat there in disbelief, because this is what happens to addicts, right? Only drug addicts, this happens to people who take too much coke. And I couldn't believe I was an addict, you know, because that was the thing that proved to me that there was something seriously wrong with me. Anyway, so I get up, I run into see my boss at the time, and I was like, I think I have a problem with drugs, and he ran out of the room, and that was it, you know. And I was so frightened, I think, of losing my job, and getting kicked out of the country. I was on a work permit, you know, I had responsibilities. And to go home, you know, Cape Town's really small. Everyone I use, you know, is small. Some of them I'd known from using with them in London. And to go back, like, the shame, I just wouldn't be able to cope. But I really wanted to stay here, I think because I connected with the fellowship. You know, I kept coming back to meetings anyway. And, you know, the way I met my sponsor was like on the back end of like a hangover. You know, I went to a women's meeting and I was sat in the room stinking of alcohol. I was stinking. I didn't realize, you know, alcohol was the thing I could not put down. And it kept me kind of out there all the time. I've been meeting lots of newcomers who, the same as me, just like not understanding that abstinence means no alcohol. And I've known a lot of people who have gone back out there just saying, well, I don't see why I can't drink. There's nothing wrong with it. It's socially acceptable. You know, that's their choice. I know I can't because I don't want to live a depraved life, because that's what happened to me. You know, I'm not going into loads of details because I'm not doing my inventory, but a depraved life. No matter that I had a job or money to pay the rent, or most of the time I didn't have money to pay the rent, but, you know, the banks are good. They give you overdrafts. And they still give me overdrafts. That hasn't changed much in recovery, but I don't know, you know, just this thing about this lifestyle I was living. It wasn't just about that. It was just that how the disease of addiction makes me a diseased human being. I mean, I forget what it's like, really, to behave in a way that is spiritually healthy to other people. I forget about everyone, you know, and just think about myself all the time. Now I can think about someone else some of the time, if not most of the time when the going's good. You know, but the recovery's got to be good for me to think about someone else most of the time. And it takes a lot of work, I think, being in recovery. And, you know, my first sponsor, she's decided she, you know, she's drinking. The person who told me to try this is, the, you know, try this as a way of life, who was out, I believe I wouldn't have gotten clean. What do I do? You know, this powerlessness, there's nothing I can do. And I've had, you know, I've had a tough few years, really, I think. Between 3 and 5 years clean, I got with someone in NA, as you do. That's kind of sometimes what we do. And he decided we were going on holiday, and he decided he was using. He must have been using before we went, but I'm so naive, you know. And I think, and I like that about myself. I like that I have the belief in the goodness in people. You know, and it's taken a long time, but I think he's kind of okay, and I have no kind of hatred to, you know, but if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have had the experience I've had or learned what I learned about responsibility, about taking responsibility for myself and my own recovery. You know, I was with someone, and I expected him to look after me. That was the expectation, and he couldn't hack it, bless him, you know, because he was an addict. We can't, you know, for me, it's just like addicts. I have to put my recovery first. I have to come first. Because without this, I can't really be there for anyone else. You know, anyway, so I lived with the disease for 2 years. And I was sitting here with these kids, you know, and I was saying to someone, I think I was saying to a friend, I have a friend who's actually, we counted yesterday, we've known, we've been friends for about 9 and a half. We met when we were 60 days clean, and we're still friends. And we were talking on the phone, and she was giving it, you know, she was really giving it to me yesterday about stuff, about, you know, my relationships and my outlook and how analytical I am and stuff. And, but she knows me just as well as my sponsor knows me, which is that's a very rare thing in my life, for someone to know me that well. And, I'd had all these keyings, and I, you know, when I was living with this man, and I loved him, and I became so ill. I took all my keyings that, like, from the very first one all the way to my multiple years, and chucked them all out because I didn't think NA worked anymore. And I'd had another sponsor then. There'd been periods, obviously, in recovery where I haven't had a sponsor. And that's not, it's not recommended that you sponsor yourself or take yourself through the steps. And I speak from experience, it's a weird one. Because you kind of, I didn't really know whether I was coming or going. So, you know, it's like I knew I needed to write a step four, and I was like, I don't think that is really not a good idea. I don't think I want to be listening to my own inventory. Can you imagine? I mean, how do you do that? Do you sit in front of the mirror? Do you record it and then listen and then give feedback? That's just crazy, isn't it? You know, I talk to myself and I can give myself answers, and that's okay. I think that's okay. But to really sit down and look at my stuff, you know, with myself, I need my sponsor. If I've learned anything about having a sponsor, it's just like, you know, I do. It's your clean time. I don't know about clean time matters. Because when you nearly lose it, that's when it matters. You know, I was so ill. I was a month shy of my 5-year clean time, and I was put on medication because I could not leave the house. I was so frightened because of my whole life, my whole recovery, and my whole life had been built on social acceptability. I have a job, I live in a nice flat, I have money in the bank, and I have a boyfriend who is in NA. Yay. You know, like, this is the fantasy, isn't it? And it didn't work. I lost all of those things. And when I lost those things, I crumbled. Because it was superficial recovery. Not that my step work or my step fours and all that stuff didn't matter. But how honest had I really been about who I was, you know? And it takes time to unpeel all these things. It took time to become really honest. And, you know, and I think sometimes I'm so honest I'm confrontational. And I have to work on it, and I get that, but there was something about that fit. Without that experience, you know, that was, what, 4 years ago now. And things got a lot worse for me after that. You know, I continued to kind of be on medication. It was awful. Because these things, the tablets that they gave me were exactly the same chemical compound as ecstasy, one of my favorites, you know, and I was like having a bath, cooking a meal, knowing that I was taking these things that felt like I was taking ecstasy. I tried to explain it to the doctor, and he didn't understand. And by then, I think I'd done another step one, and, you know, all the stuff that was coming out was about my addiction to people, you know, my lack of responsibility, how I want someone else to fix me, I was going to do that, and that, you know, and it acting out, just like not taking any responsibility for myself. And, you know, and I've kind of been on my own ever since, really. You know, it's like relationships and dating. Oh, my God, it's like that's a whole share on its own, isn't it? Like 40 minutes about dating as a single person in recovery who doesn't drink. People don't like that one, I found. They find it uncomfortable because I'm pushing convention, you know. It's like, what reason could I possibly have not to drink? There must be something wrong with you, Tanya. And then we'll sit across from the table on our date at dinner, and then I'll go, it's only the first date. I don't think I should tell you now. So I wait until the third one, and then I go, okay, that's really cool. And I go, okay, cool, we'll see how long this lasts. And then we don't go to the pub, and we don't, you know, we do other things. We go to the cinema, and we go do things, like go to the arcade, do something else, but don't go to the pub. The novelty wears off, you know, people don't understand. And then they start seeing me as an addict. I'll say something, or I'll do something. And I don't mean to, I'm just being myself. But it'll be off key, or I'll become really insecure and clingy. And I'll go, you know, I'm on my step, whatever. I'll just be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not high. It's become amusing now. But, you know, the rejection, oh my God, it's crippling. And then I get over it, you know, and it's like my life. My life is my life. And I'm happy. The thing is like I'm really happy. The thing about quitting smoking was it reminds me of, I really want to you. You know, like when I was in my first 18 months clean, oh, it was the loneliest time in my life. It was the worst, like, 18 months of my life, but the best 18 months ever, you know. And I've just had a year like, of that where I sort of, I refused to go back to social work. I couldn't, you know, I can't go back to sort of my profession. And I went off and studied art, and I was good at it. But it's been like, I haven't had no money like for a couple of years. It's awful. Like, I like shoes and stuff, you know, and I like eating food. But I was smoking. I was spending all my, you know, and I'm smoking and I'm just thinking, oh, my God, this is awful. So I go and work in a supermarket, which is just like, I just had to swallow it and just do it. And it's been okay. I actually quite like this is the thing. I quite like it. And then people go, oh, are you still working at, you know, and I go, yeah. And then I think, should I not like it? Should I be doing something else? But it's just, it's really, my life is just really simple. You know, of course I could do with more money. Who doesn't want more money? But I'll get there. And I've had one of those years, you know, where it's like, if I'm going to follow my dream, I have to sacrifice something. And in a way, I guess that's what my recovery is about. It's like, if I'm willing, if I want to be the best kind of human being that I'm going to be, this is the way I've chosen. Like, this is my way of life. It's been 9 years. I can leave now if I want. You know, I've done a stint. I've known plenty of people who've done 10 years, gone out and had a drink and go, yeah, I'm all right now. And I think, okay, I want to do that. But I don't want to. I'm happy, you know, I'm happier. And you know, through the process of the steps and through the process of just getting to know everyone, just about everyone I'm looking at, I've known for like years, really. And I used to come to this meeting in my first 90 days when it was back that way. And it had these like big orange lights and Ollie was there. It was one of the people who started the meeting, you know, and it was the one place I could come and I felt safe and I'd sit at the back and I'd feel completely safe. Then the meeting was quite quiet. There were speakers, but it was a really quiet meeting. And I just felt good, you know, and I've been coming ever since, on and off, really. And I do love this. I miss the lights. I do miss the old venue because there was something sort of romantic about it. And I like a bit of romance. Anyway, I'm obviously coming to it. I'm going to start talking crap in a minute. But I'm grateful to be clean. You know, I think part of what I'm saying is recovery isn't boring, as you can hear. There's lots of things to kind of like keep you busy. If you're not sure, just keep coming. You know, keep coming back. If you're new, keep coming back. If you're not new, still keep coming back because we're still quite sick. And, you know, we need to recover. And we recover together. That's what we do here. So, thank you, John, for a good start. That was good for me. And thanks, everyone, for being here.